She came from Providence, one in Rhode Island, where the old world shadows hang heavy in the air. She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee. Just as her.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show. Episode number 90 to be exact, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms without anybody telling you what to do, but to simply do it your way. I talk about practical ideas on this show, no tinfoil hat type thinking, no conspiracy far out stuff. We just try to keep it rooted in common sense, and folks, I am excited. I am stoked up about episode number 90 right now because I have a very special opportunity. And this is actually pre-recorded, but it wasn't recorded very long ago, just a couple of days ago. This is my first time that I have a chance to present this to you. For many, many months since I started doing today's Survival Show, I wanted to bring my special guest on the show and do an interview with her. And I finally now have this opportunity. So, in just a minute or two, you are going to hear an interview that I did with Lisa Bedford, the Survival Mom. Lisa Bedford at www.thesurvivalmom.com. You know, when I first discovered Lisa's blog, she was pretty new to the survival blogging community. I was new to doing this, and I was new to doing the podcast. We were both kind of trying to find our way out there, and we've been supporting each other ever since. And folks, you know that I've been talking a lot about her in various podcasts because I agree with something that she says, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. Survival is a mom's job. And you know, if you got a chance to listen to episode 88, I think it was, where I talked about my frugal mom, I talked about learning to live without, I talked about my upbringing. The reason I do this, folks, the reason I think this way, the reason I have a self-sufficient preparedness type of a mindset is because what my parents, but specifically what my mom taught me when I was a kid. And you've heard that story if you've listened to my shows, so I'm not going to, you know, get into that again. But I really believe that moms can have such a huge impact on the survival thinking of our kids. Now, I know there's most of my listeners are men. So you guys out there might be thinking, you know, Bob, what are we going to get out of listening to the Survival Mom? Let me tell you something. You're going to get a ton of really, really good information. I'm not really going to make any opening comments about what Lisa and I talked about because this is so good. This interview is so good, and the points that she makes are so right on. I can't add anything to it. In fact, I got to be real careful here that I don't take away anything from her message. So, with that said, I'm going to knock out 40 seconds worth of announcements, and then I'm going to go ahead and turn on the interview. The website is www.todayssurvival.com. Don't forget to join our forum. If any of you are listening to this show and you haven't joined our forum, Lisa Bedford, the Survival Mom, is even on our forum. Our community is a great community of like-minded people, and they want to chat with you. Soon, I'm going to be making some improvements to the forum. A listener recently gave me a great suggestion that I'm going to put up there. Also, don't forget about Knives and Gear, one of our sponsors, because I'm going to have Jeff on this show next. And we're going to be talking about survival knives. So don't forget to check out knivesandgear.com. Last announcement real quick, the SAC contest, Survival Activist Club. It ends May 30th, so hurry up, get your referrals in, and write your politicians and get those responses. That's all I'm going to say about that. All right, here we go. Again, I got no comments. I can't say this any better. So here we go. Let me go ahead and turn on the interview. When it's over, I am going to inject one closing comment I have for you before I close the show out. Here you go. Okay, listeners, thanks for allowing me to do this interview. And I have finally on the phone with me after months. I've been wanting to put this together for so long, folks, and I'm excited about this. I've got Lisa Bedford, also known as The Survival Mom, and her website, thesurvivalmom.com. How you doing, Lisa?
I'm doing great.
Well, good. First of all, thanks for coming on the show. There are a lot of listeners. There are a lot of people on the forum that admire you, admire your blog. I love your blog, you know, and let me just say something to all the guys out there. I know her blog is called The Survival Mom, but it's got a lot of good stuff on it. And I've lurked around that blog a long time, and I really admire your writing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And, you know, Bob, before we get started, I wanted to thank you because you were one of the very first people in the whole survival preparedness niche when I very first started who thought I had something to contribute. And right off the bat, you invited me to join your forum, and you commented on my blog. You know, when you get those first few comments, it's always a thrill. And I've never forgotten that. And so I wanted to thank you on this podcast and let everyone know that besides doing a great forum and, you know, this podcast that you keep it going on a regular basis, you're just a very nice guy, and I really appreciate that support.
I appreciate that. Same to you. You know, I think we started pretty close to the same time, and I know what it's like to get those first few comments, the first few readers, the first few listeners, so you're very welcome. Thank you. Thank you for that compliment. And since we're on that subject, let me go ahead and ask the first question. Tell us, why did you start your blog?
Well, I started the blog, it just kind of came to me in a flash one night, because I had been a regular reader of Survival Blog and a lot of the other similar websites and blogs online, and they were nearly 100% geared toward men, with topics that were of high interest to men, and not very much out there for women. And, you know, my perspective as a mom is one of looking at my home and my children, the need for me to continue providing stability and nurturing for them. And yet, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm always aware that the world is very uncertain and the future is very uncertain. And so moms have, you know, different interests and needs, and maybe we're not so interested in reloading equipment, or maybe, you know, some moms are, but a lot of times we want to know, well, how do we talk to our kids about this? How do we, you know, work with our children so they're resilient and strong, and we don't freak them out when they start, you know, seeing, you know, stockpiles of, you know, dehydrated food or whatever, you know, in the back room. So that really was the reason I started my blog.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, one of the reasons I took an interest in your blog is, you know, I'm into the survival mindset because of my mom. You know, there are a lot of people who may have who've been listening to my show for a long time. It's because of my frugal mom, and you know, a lot of people know that I lost my dad when I was 13 and a half. So my mom was left with three young boys to raise, and we didn't have a whole lot. We had a hobby farm, we had land, we learned to become self-sufficient. So it was because of her that my mind got open to this at a very young age. And so I'm so glad you said that, and that's why I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing, because as your blog says, survival is a mom's job.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I have found in my own home is that, you know, in so many ways, the mom kind of leads the way. You know,
yes.
The dad is the backbone of the family, but sometimes it's the mom that says, you know, we need to do this, or she sees a need that maybe, you know, dad doesn't see. And for single moms, you know, she's it. And moms really have to be on board the whole preparedness bandwagon. Because if not, you know, our husbands or boyfriends, you know, they're kind of, you know, running around furtively trying to stock up bug-out bags or, you know, doing their research. But what a difference it makes when there's actually more of a teamwork going on instead of just one or the other having that awareness.
Absolutely. I'm glad you said that. And, you know, there are some female listeners to my show, and they're on the forum, but I hope that there are some men listening to this, as I know that there's quite a few of them, and if maybe their wife is or significant other is not completely 100% on board, maybe listening to this podcast might help.
I hope so.
So I do too. Well, then, now that you've told us why you started your blog, tell us what got you into survival.
You know, I've always had that mindset, and if there was ever someone who really was not predisposed to this, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's great story of survival can be kind of illustrated. Last summer, we were hiking around this beautiful lake up near Lake Tahoe. And we were all geared up. I had my kids. We had on our sturdy walking shoes. So did my mom. And she had a fanny pack. And I was thinking, oh, she has water in there. She has maybe some bug spray. No, she sat down on a rock, opened it up, and she had 12 lip glosses in there.
Okay.
That was her idea of, you know, the survival pack that she was going to take on this hike. And a funny story about my dad and his kind of preparedness, you know, survival outdoorsman legacy is a vivid memory I have when I was a young teenager. He took my brothers on a quite expensive guided hunting trip. They didn't, you know, there was no big great results from the hunting trip, but they talked for weeks about the cooler that was stocked with candy bars, and they could eat all they wanted. And so if there's ever someone who does not have that kind of a heritage, you know, with parents who were, you know, frugal or, you know, outdoorsmen or anything like that, it's me. So all I can attribute this to is just a fascination I've had with survival stories. And whenever I read about, you know, survivors of a plane crash or whatever, you know, I always stick in my imagination. I put myself there and I think, gosh, what would I do in that situation? You know, how would I survive? Could I survive? And that is just a longstanding interest and fascination. So when I began seeing what may very well be just kind of a permanent downturn in our economy happening, and hardworking friends of ours, certainly not slackers, Lee Holmes, be out of work for a year and a half, I have never believed that this won't happen to me, you know, whatever this is. And so I just began really researching a whole lot more on how my family could be better prepared. And really the disaster, the crisis that is most likely to happen in most American families now isn't really a volcanic eruption. It's not even the floods, you know, that happened in Tennessee, you know, last week. Really, the main calamity is something that has to do with family finances and the family's budget.
Oh, wow. Okay. You know, I'm so glad you brought that up. I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, sorry to interrupt you there, Lisa. You know what? That is so true. That is so true. And there's so many people preparing for these far-out scenarios. And – you know, I'll throw my hand up in the air. I'm as a kid, my family was victimized by a very serious financial situation. When we lost, you know, our father, when I was only 13 and a half, he was the major, you know, income earner in our family. That was tragic. That was tragic. So thank you for bringing that. That's, you know, so since we're on this subject, then let's talk about family. You know, what would you say to everybody out there that has kids, let's say children under the age of 15 or 16, and I'm one of those. What are some of the first lessons you teach your children?
In what respect? Related to preparedness or what?
Let's talk finances first.
Oh, okay. Well, like a lot of parents, early on we did read about the need for children to learn responsibility for, you know, their own finances. Mm-hmm. And at an early age, we set up the three-bank system for them, where when they received money, they would put a third of it aside into savings, a third of it into a jar where they were free to spend that money, and then a third went toward giving, donating to someone, buying something for a family in need. And that system worked very well. Now, the weak link in that was my husband and I, because we just would forget to bring home quarters. And so, you know, our kids, you know, they, you know, this Friday would pass a tat. Oh, yeah, double next week. So the lesson I learned from that is with that system, you have to have, you know, your stash of quarters or dollar bills or dimes or whatever it is you're using. But that really was the first, their first encounter with lessons related to finances. And my husband and I, you know, we lead what I would consider, you know, a lifestyle that is not extravagant at all. And I talk to the children, you know, often about the need to compare prices. And we talk about, you know, enticing commercials on TV. In fact, one of the best things we ever did was just put out the expense toward a Tilo, because it taught our children to hate commercials, number one, and then to recognize commercials for what they are. And that is just, you know, just a glorified way of getting money out of your pocket. And so now they don't like commercials any more than I do. So really that was just, you know, kind of recognizing, you know, that there are unnecessary expenses, that there are always people out there that want to separate you from your money, and you have to really give a lot of thought. And then being responsible, you know, always knowing that you want to have money to give others, and you want to have money that's just to spend, and then there's always a rainy day somewhere down the road, and you're going to need money for that also.
Yeah, that's, you know what, I never thought about that purpose for a DVR or a TiVo. That's cool. That's right. It teaches them to hate commercials. Bravo. I love it. That's great.
Well, you know what? This isn't a commercial for anything like that, but I also love the fact that they were only watching TV shows that I picked out ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
And so whatever was up on the menu, whether it was Berenstain Bears or whether it was, you know, episodes of, you know, something from the Animal Planet, they just weren't allowed to browse and pick anything they wanted. So I got to choose beforehand what they were going to watch. And that kind of gave me some peace of mind because I knew they weren't going to gravitate towards shows I didn't want them to watch. And so, yeah, that TiVo was really a good investment.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the third. You know, my wife and I learned that from Dave Ramsey. We do it a little bit differently, but it's very similar. We do 50, 25, and 25. He gets to spend half. He has to spend half. He saves 25%, and he gives 25%. You know, think about that. I want all the listeners to think about something for a minute. What kind of position would we be in right now if, let's say, starting two generations ago, people would have learned to save a third of their income? I mean, that's amazing. I mean, if everybody had a third of their income in the bank and they've been doing that for 10 years, we may not have quite the economic problems we have.
I know. And, you know, my parents were very, very smart with their money. But what was interesting now, you know, as a parent now myself, is that they never overtly taught us much about managing money. So even though they made smart decisions, for whatever reason, maybe times are different then, you know, I'm not, you know, those are back in the olden days, but having, you know, just kind of learning from them could have saved me a lot of angst, you know, especially as a young adult when I had my first credit card.
Yeah. Well, good. Thanks for sharing that. What do you cover with kids about things like bug out bags?
Well, what I have found works best is just coming at this from a very matter of fact attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't make a big deal out of anything. So, you know, when we're packing to go on a vacation, I mean, everything is just matter of fact. And so when I began putting together the 72-hour kit or vehicle bag or whatever in my car, I carry it all the time in there. And I was just kind of, you know, presented it to the kids matter-of-factly, but also, hey, you know, we really want to be ready for emergencies. And I talked to them about other emergencies that we're ready for.
Sure.
How we always have a first aid kit. We've kept a first aid kit and a roadside emergency kit in the car for many years, and they're very well aware of that. So
Wonderful. This
is just one step beyond that. So it was just, you know, calm, you know, no hysteria, no scare tactics. That's the last thing I wanted to do with, you know, the kids, with them to, you know, go to sleep at night worrying, you know, but, you know, when is something going to happen? But just, you know, just kind of the approach we've taken to food storage and training them with firearms. It was all just, we're doing this now. This is a new family hobby. And our kids, they don't seem to have, you know, fears about, you know, the future or anything like that. And I think that is why, is that we really don't foster that either in our are the words, you know, when we speak to them, our mannerisms, our body language, you know, there just isn't that element of, you know, living in fear, you know, in our home.
Thank you for the reminder, because I'm sometimes guilty of talking about too much of the fearful stuff around my son. And, you know, some listeners might think that's surprising to hear me say that, because I'm so much against all of the alarmist views out there. But sometimes I find myself at home privately talking about that stuff, and my son hears that.
Well, you never know. Because, I mean, how kids are going to react. You know, some will, you know, if your attitude is one where this is the way it is and, hey, it's a smart thing to get ready for things. One of my first classes that I taught in the Phoenix area, it was on preparedness. And a boy was sitting there that was about 12, and he came up afterwards, and he was all gung-ho into the whole survivalist type of, you know, thinking. And he had read James Rawls' book, Patriots. And you know what, Bob? I didn't know what to think. It was, I just didn't really see, you know, and he may be very mature for his age, but also I think that kids sometimes have a hard time differentiating between, you know, what is realistic, you know, what could really happen, and
right.
what is out there a little bit, and what is something that we're not going to worry about. And I don't know at what age kids can really, you know, decipher, you know, the fine lines between some of those. And so, but every parent knows their kid better than I do. That's, you know, that's for sure. I just want,
right.
I just, you know, just kind of, you know, raise the question in my mind, you know, Lisa, you know, you just, you know, always remember that there are little kids, you know, around my house listening in, and they're fascinated
yes.
with adult conversations and adult topics. And, you know, what I might view as just a very casual conversation of, oh, you know, this flood and, gosh, you know, could that happen here? They may go to sleep at night and, you know, be filled with fear that they're going to wake up, you know, in a home that's been washed away.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, thank you. Thank you for that great reminder. I appreciate that.
All right, you're welcome.
Let me change the subject just a bit. Since you brought up firearms, I want to talk a little bit about that. You know, folks know that I don't like to make this a gun podcast. I got a different podcast for that. But, you know, firearms is a preparation. It's just – it's one preparation that people make that believe in being prepared for events. And you recently put, I think, the best blog post that you've put on your blog ever. And it's called The Surprising Lessons of a Family Firearm Hobby. I read that. I commented on that. And I'm going to ask people when this podcast is over with to go read that on the survivalmom.com, The Surprising Lessons of a Family Firearm Hobby. But why don't you shed some light on that?
Okay. Well, my husband grew up in Guam. He lived there. His dad was attached to one of the airlines that had Guam as a kind of a hub. And he grew up just going out into the jungle, you know, with his buddies and just, you know, shooting up a storm. And in those days, you know, the availability of ammo, you know, wasn't in question. And he
mm-hmm.
actually became very proficient and very skillful with, you know, his target shooting. But when we were married, kind of shame on him, he kind of just dropped it. And he never once mentioned that, gosh, Lisa, you know, maybe you should learn how to shoot a gun. And, kind of, you know, in a way, my parents had that same attitude. So even though I grew up with guns, it was never anything that, I don't know if my parents didn't think girls should do that, but it was never anything that was encouraged or mentioned.
Right.
And kind of as things began to change about 2 or 3 years ago, we were headed out of town, and all of a sudden our plans finally changed. And we were about 50 miles from home. I said, you know what, hon, why don't we go to a shooting range? And my husband has a habit.
Wow.
He nothing ever phases him, Bob. Nothing. And he just took it all in stride, and he had never heard those words come out of my mouth before. And sure enough, you know, we went to a shooting range, and he chose just a .22 handgun for me to learn on.
Right.
And after that, I was hooked, because to me, I've always been a, you know, a very strong proponent of the Second Amendment and our rights under the Second Amendment, but
right.
I had never really, you know, done that myself. And so just very, very quickly, we decided that it wasn't enough just for the two of us to know how to, you know, how to shoot guns and how to handle them around the house. We really wanted our kids to learn that themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal was twofold, and they sound contradictory, but we wanted our kids to know that guns are no big deal.
So okay,
what
good,
we really
good.
What we wanted to do was to take away any mystery. The scene that I can't get out of my mind is the scene from The Sixth Sense, where the boy who sees dead people sees this young boy, 12 or 13 years old, and the boy says, hey, come with me, and I'm going to show you my dad's gun. And he turns away, and there's a big hole in the side of his head.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Remember
yeah.
that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. You know, because any parent who thinks their kids don't kind of sneak around when they can and, you know, try to find mysterious things around the house that are forbidden is only fooling themselves. And so we really want to demystify guns, and we have done that because, I'll tell you, when we get ready to go to the shooting range, I mean, my daughter's eyes are rolling, and she has to bring a book to read, and she has these customized ear protection, and she goes out there, and she'll shoot. You know, she'll shoot maybe 40, 50 rounds, and she sits and reads an American Girl book. So
yeah.
We've really demystified that. The second thing we wanted to do was for them to learn that shooting guns are a huge deal.
Yes,
things
they are.
Can take a life in a moment. And so
yes.
The flip side of the guns are no big deal is the we really wanted them to understand that guns are a huge deal in the sense that there aren't very many other things around that can take a life that quickly.
That's
and
right.
So,
amen.
Yes. And so I think that just, again, normalizing it, demystifying, you know, the whole process, that really, I think, has, you know, and plus providing a fun hobby. You know, it is fun for us to go. We have an outdoor range that we frequent here in the Phoenix area.
Right. Right.
And we just all like to go out there, you know, maybe once or twice a month. And we've been trying to conserve our ammo because this is too easy to go out there and blow through, you know, two or three boxes.
Isn't that the truth?
So, yeah, we've cut down a little bit on our visits. But I'll tell you, I feel that our kids have learned a practical skill, if nothing else. And I know I expound on that more in the article.
Yeah. Well, you know, if I may comment, you have perfectly described what is commonly called, instead of kid-proofing your guns, you gun-proofed your kids.
Yes.
And you just described that probably better than anybody I've heard say it in a long time. And something else I like from your blog post, and maybe this is something that people haven't thought of, so that's why I want you to read this article that she put on her blog here. You wrote that your firearm family hobby is just one more reason for us to spend time together doing something we all enjoy. You know, so many times families are not spending any time together anymore, and this is a survival preparation. You know, if you have to come up with some kind of a hobby to spend time together, and if that hobby happens to be shooting, you know, by all means, in my opinion, go do it, because, you know, the family that stays together is the family that survives together.
Right.
And I thought that was the best part of that article, is that it's
thank
a hobby.
You.
It's another reason for you to spend time together. I think that's great. And
you know what's ironic is that as a homeschool mom, I'm with my kids all day, every day. I can't get away from them. And you know what? I can't get enough of them. I don't know
wow.
if it's because we spend so much time together, but I just love spending time with my kids. Sometimes we'll be driving down the street just running errands, and we're cracking up over one thing or another. So, you know, as they get older, I don't want them to develop so many outside interests that that they're growing apart. Over the years, I've heard people, you know, who are in the midst of divorce, they say
uh-huh.
so commonly, well, we just, you know, we grew apart. And I feel like, why, if that happens with a couple, why don't you think that could happen between parents and children or siblings? Everyone is going off down their own, you know, in their own direction and developing completely different sets of, separate sets of friends and separate interests. And my family is too, this is so important to me, you know, and
oh, yeah.
I had a friend that told me once, you know, she was about my age, I think she was a little older, and she was in her mid-50s and said, but gosh, you know, it's kind of depressing. You know, my kids are off doing their own thing. And so just the more activities you can do together, because not only is that encouraging the family to stick together, but also you're really setting them up in a way that for the future that nothing else can. There's so many things that can't be learned by watching a YouTube video or reading a book. Sometimes you just have to be there, and you have to watch someone do it, and you have to watch, have someone explain and guide you. And who
absolutely.
Better do that with than parents? And when our focus is on, you know, teaching them practical skills, those are kinds of things that they're not going to learn in schools. And
no, they're not.
Teaches his, yeah, and Adelsa Dad teaches his son and daughter, you know, how to repair an appliance, or how to work on a car, how to change a tire. They're, you know, they're going to grow up and they're going to be 25 years old on the side of the road waiting for AAA because they never learned how to do something like change a tire.
Yeah, amen to that. And, you know, me and my brothers, we were taught to do things for ourselves as much as we possibly could, because we were taught, hey, nobody's going to be there to help you. And, you know,
yeah.
oftentimes my mom was right about that. You know, no, there's nobody there to help. You know, she was working and she was doing things, and there was nobody there to help us. So we had to fend for ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's – I'm so glad you made that point. I've noticed in some of your blog posts, you've mentioned that you also personally conceal carry.
Uh-huh.
And so why don't you give us the female perspective as to why women should do that? Because there's a lot of women that seem
uh-huh.
to be opposed to that. I have my own opinions why mm-hmm. women should do it, but why do you think women should do it?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I want to clear up a misconception about concealed carry, and that is, I think for the responsible gun owner, which comprises by far most of the people who choose to conceal carry, carrying a gun does not make you less careful with a gun or more likely to go off on a shooting spree. It actually makes you far more careful.
Absolutely.
I am so aware when I do have that gun in my little holster, I am so aware every single minute it's there. Now, number one, it kind of, you know, pokes into me, so I can't ignore it. But there would never, ever be a time where I would pull that out without giving it a lot of very serious consideration. And,
that's great.
You know, as a woman, one of the main reasons that I did decide to go that route, and now in Arizona, you don't have to have a concealed carry permit because of a law that was recently passed. But
right.
I chose to do that, really, again, going back to my role as a mom. And because I homeschool, it doesn't have to do with the homeschooling part, but, you know, on any given day, my kids could be, and I could be anywhere in town.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are times where, boy, you know, this field trip's not in the greatest part of town. Or, hey, you know, what's going on over there? It looks like a fight. And so I really chose to have the ability to carry concealed if I ever felt I needed to. And if one instructor, you know, explained to me, you know, he can carry, you know, his holster on the outside of his jeans, and that's perfectly fine. But if it gets cold and he puts on a jacket, it's now concealed, and it's a crime or against the law. And so I thought if I have that actual permit, I can have the gun with me, and I don't have to worry, you know, wearing a jacket or not wearing a jacket or whatever. So to me, a gun is, it provides a little bit of an insurance for the kids and I. And I view a gun as the great equalizer. And that's not an original thought by any means, but that equalizes the playing field.
Yeah, it does. And you know, I've always looked at it as at least it gives you a fighting chance.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
You know, it gives you a fighting chance. And whether it's an equalizer or not, it gives you more of a fighting chance than if you didn't have it with you.
I know. It levels the playing field. So
it levels, well, a little bit. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So there's, you know, someone that is, and I've always, here's something else, and it may sound kind of out there, but, you know, most moms, probably maybe every mom, would, you know, have said or thought to herself, you know, I would die to protect my children.
Right.
And one day, the thought occurred to me, well, if I would die to protect my kids, I'd much rather kill to protect them, which makes me sound kind of wacky, but it's like I would rather see the bad guy's picture on the 6 o'clock news than pictures of myself and my two kids as, you know, unfortunate victim of, you know, some crazy person and a senseless crime. You know, there is no question about that. And so I'm pretty militant as a mom. I'm not the kind of mom that just kind of sits home and just, you know, worries. I don't spend my time worrying. I'd much rather spend my time actually doing something.
Well, you know, I think what you just described is not being a militant mom. I think that's being a normal mom. I mean, let's face it. Well, think about it. I mean, you know, people like to use the mother bear protecting her cubs analogy.
Right.
And, you know, if the mother bear can protect her cubs, and mother bears, they kill to protect their cubs, you know.
Yes.
And anybody who's an outdoors person that has run into a mother bear with cubs knows exactly what I'm talking about. So I don't think you're a militant mom. I think you're a normal mom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great.
I'm normal too.
Well, and that's excellent. Now, I want to change gears again here a little bit. I didn't email you and tell you that I was going to ask you this question, but don't worry. It's a fairly benign question. If you had to pick one threat that you think is the greatest threat facing the majority of people today, and let's not just confine it to America, because we have international listeners, or pick two. What do you think in your opinion right now are the two primary threats that we're facing?
You know, natural disasters and severe weather events have always been there, and they'll always be there.
That's true.
Those are localized. And only people who live in those areas, you know what's likely to happen, how to prepare for that. So it isn't anything along those lines.
Okay.
The greatest threat that I see by far is our economy just reaching a tipping point.
Yes.
And no one, and this is worldwide, not just America, no one is going to be there to rescue us.
It's true.
And if the dollar loses its value, if the federal government would confiscate 401k funds and tell
right.
us they're going to give us a voucher or something, most people don't have a trust fund. Most people have a very, very small security blanket, if you will.
Right.
And a family can find themselves in dire, dire straits in just a matter of a few weeks.
Absolutely.
And by far, that happening in mass is the greatest danger, the greatest crisis that's looming over us. And it's unlike a natural disaster or a weather event. It's not something that we can't see coming.
Right.
And neither is it something that's localized. It's going to affect, you know, just layers and layers and generations, really, of people around the world. And
yeah,
so,
well, I think I agree. I think it already is affecting everybody.
Is. And you know what? A lot of people talk about the end of the world as we know it. And I say the end of the world as we know it, as I know it, as someone who just turned 50, the end of the world as I know it has already come and gone.
It's already here.
Because I do not expect that the return to the, you know, early, you know, 2002, 2003, 2004, when our home prices were zooming up and we were all just giddy, I don't see that ever coming back. And I see just a time of austerity for most Americans and citizens around the world and doing without, and in many, many cases, just living hand to mouth. And the experiences in Iceland, the experiences in Argentina, those really are good case studies.
Sure.
Now, there's never been a situation in the history of the world where a country that had the size, the power, the wealth of America, where such a large percentage of Americans live in such great comfort. You know,
yes.
People in America who live in poverty, my goodness, they have the iPods, they have cell phones. I mean, our definition of poverty here is so far ahead of poverty around the world that I'm not even making light of that, but in a way, Americans don't even know what poverty is. And that is because of the strength of our country and our economy, but it has been just, damaged beyond repair. And that really, I think, is what the reason that I have been speaking out so well. You know, actually, whenever I'm invited to do, to be interviewed, I almost always agree to the interview, because if
sure.
I really believe that these times are coming, and most Americans are living like it's 2006, 2005, you know, and
yes.
if they haven't lost their jobs, there's so many, you know, we talk about a, 10, 12, 17% unemployment. Well, that means there is still 80, 85, 90% employment.
That's true.
And for those people, if they're not paying attention to the news, and if they're not paying attention to what's happening around the world, and all they're looking at is their paychecks keep coming in, as far as they're concerned, nothing has changed. And if they hear, my little voice, or if they happen upon my blog, or if they happen upon an article where, someone in with this mindset has been interviewed, that
right.
may make the difference between that family having some things in place and not.
Well, you
and
know,
as far
it
as
might.
A second, uh-huh, it might. And
yeah.
as far as the second place goes, Bob, I don't think there is a second place. I mean, I'd have to give that some thought, but the greatest crisis by far. Now, I have a cousin who does work for Homeland Security. And, with someone who is just, survival-minded and wanting to be prepared, I've talked to him. And here in Arizona, he said that the main thing we had to be concerned about wasn't, terrorist attacks. And although, with every week, you see that's, the potential of that is more and more likely. But
right.
he said he would be most concerned about what comes across the border.
Right.
And so,
right.
I've not forgotten that either. But as far as affecting the biggest number of people, it's collapse of our economy.
Well, and I 100% agree with you. And I just recently did a podcast. It was two episodes ago, episode number 88, on learning to live without.
Mm-hmm.
And learning to live without and be content. And I talked about some lessons I learned from my frugal mom when I was a kid. And, it's a lot of people are facing a grim reality that they just cannot live high off the hog like they used to. And your comment about Americans don't know poverty, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. I mean, you're exactly right. They just don't. And I'm not trying to make light of anybody
right.
that is living in tough situation today. But you also made a comment which was interesting earlier. You said, the government may not always be there to help. I'd like to add to that and say the government may not always have the money to help us.
Yeah.
You know, not only our government, but governments around the world, everybody's running out of money. You know, with the exception of maybe China, but that's it. So thanks for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
That's all the questions I had, but, you know, I want to go ahead and kind of just give the last few minutes here, give you the open floor, let you talk about what you want to talk about. And if you want to talk about some stuff on your blog, or I know you're writing a book. You're writing a book coming up, yeah, too, aren't you?
I am, actually. I was very blessed last month to be contacted by a literary agency in New York. And the interview I did, many months ago with Newsweek had just caught the attention of this one agent. And apparently he had been looking at my blog, and he just sent me a really brief email and said, have you ever thought of writing a book? And that has always been probably my ultimate goal. You know, my ultimate goal, you know, I think that I enjoy writing the blog entries, and I enjoy answering people's comments and the occasional interview. But writing a book was always in the back of my mind. And one of the big reasons for that is that that's a way to reach more people.
Yes, it is.
And to reach them in a way that might not, you know, just a book with a cover of, you know, a cute survival mom on it, you know, that someone can pick up at a bookstore or through Amazon or whatever, is just maybe a good stepping stone for getting people, you know, just kind of getting feet wet. However, as I've been writing it, I've also been including a lot of information that I've learned in my research that I haven't written about on the blog. So I think it will be a combination of a lot of new information for my blog regulars, and as well as, you know, what I call baby steps. And so kind of in preparation for that, last week I started a series called The Baby Steps.
Ah. And,
this was something that I had in mind because I was interviewed by the CBS affiliate in New York. And I was thinking that when that story does air, there will be people visiting my blog who maybe in the back of their minds they've been worried but didn't know what to do, or all of a sudden this whole idea of preparedness is brand new. And I didn't want them to be, you know, confronted with articles on, you know, dehydrate your own food, or do you have, you know, enough food to last a year. And there's a lot of information out there that's intimidating. And in fact, one funny story is when I kind of began really getting into this, oh gosh, a year and a half, 2 years ago, I would read Survival Blog. And there were things in Survival Blog that would scare me to death.
It is kind of scary.
Yeah. And I would tell my husband, and one day after about 4 or 5 weeks, he forbade me from ever going to that blog again. He said, you are not going back to that blog. He said, it just scares you too much. And I obeyed him for probably a month. And I thought, you know, after a month, I was like, okay, you know, I'm tougher now. I can handle it. And I have been able to handle it for whatever reason. You know, kind of once I got over that initial, you know, fear and panic and the world's going to end, you know, in the next few weeks and we're not ready.
Right.
Once I got over that fear, then I found that, yeah, you know, just being proactive, doing what I can, where I can, you know, where I am with what I have is really just the best approach.
Do what you can with what you have wherever you are. Absolutely. Uh-huh. And, you know, I'm so glad you brought this up about your book. You know, if your book turns out to be like your blog, it's going to be fantastic. You know, I want to compliment you on something. Well, here's what I want to compliment you on. There's a lot of blogs out there. What I like about your posts, when you make a post, is you're brief, but you get to the point quickly, and then you make the point, and then you stop writing. And I hope that doesn't sound weird, but I've always, you know, I was always taught that being brief is good. Brevity is something that people enjoy as long as you're giving them value for it.
And you know what? The main reason I do that, Bob, is there are blogs out there that have a wealth of information, and each article is, gosh, 1,200, 1,500 words or more, and I don't have that kind of time.
I don't
and
either.
Sometimes I don't have that kind of attention span. And so
I don't either.
I do try to take, you know, just, you know, break down, you know, one idea or a handful of ideas and, you know, just be very succinct about it and say what I want to say. And then there are so many times I've looked at what I've written and I thought, I don't even need that paragraph, you know, and I started deleting. And I think that I like the idea that if someone comes to my blog and they just have a couple of minutes, they can either click on one of the featured blog posts, or they can, you know, look through my archives, and they can pick up something of value to them in just 5 minutes. And so I'm glad that you noticed that, because that actually was one of my goals from the beginning.
Yeah, and I struggle with that with this podcast. I don't like to get too long-winded on this podcast because, you know, just like reading something, you know, to anybody who's still listening to this podcast right now, and you've been listening here for about 42 minutes or so, thank you, because my attention span is not that long either, and it's even difficult for me to do them much longer than this. So, I just want to say this as we close, Lisa. At some point, I would like to have you on for a part two.
Oh, okay. I would enjoy that.
This was a fantastic interview. This was so well done. I think listeners are going to enjoy this a lot.
I hope so.
Thank you for the great insight. Keep going. Please don't stop doing what you're doing. Okay.
I have no plans to stop.
Please don't do that, because you are contributing to changing lives. And thank you very much for coming on the show.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, you take care. Thanks.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Wow. Wasn't that great? I'm going to have to listen to this interview several times again for me to catch everything that she said. And so my closing comment on this show is simply, well done, Lisa. I can't add anything to that. That was so good. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for helping me promote my podcast and the forum, and I'm going to continue to do that for you. And ladies and gentlemen who are listening to this program, I just want you to know that there are lots of good people out there that have great things to say, as you heard in this show, and as you heard recently from Jack Pine Savage, and as you've heard from Ghost Rider, who's been on the show, and as you've heard from Dustin Keener, and as you've heard from LV Mutineer, who did a guest podcast for us, and as you heard from Rough Rider Fan, who did a guest podcast for us. They were all excellent. So let me go ahead and put out the word one more time. If you want to come on the show, if you've got something you want to talk about, something that's on your mind, or if you have an area of expertise, come on, give me a call, send me an email, let's get you on the show. Well done, Lisa Bedford. Go to www.thesurvivalmom.com. There will certainly be a link in the show notes. And folks, I am Bob Main, and you have just listened to episode number 90 of today's Survival Show, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms, and to do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Take care, folks. Catch you next time. Bye-bye.
The old world shadows hang heavy in the air. She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee, just as her father came across the sea.